Did you see her?
Yeah.
And what she needed to do was done?
Yes.
Praise be his mercy. Maybe June can find some peace now. I'll pray for her. You don't own me. I'm not your property.
So take a shifty little beady eye over me. How's she doing?
Yeah, she's fine.
No, she's not fine. Gilead would have killed Fred. She just wanted to do it herself with her own hands.
Welcome to Eyes on Gilead, our weekly podcast dedicated to The Handmaid's Tale. There is a lot going on in this show, and we think it helps to talk it out after every episode. It is so good to be back with new episodes to unpack. And I'm Fiona Williams, and when I'm not doing this, I'm head of curation at SBS On Demand, and I'm joined once more by my colleagues and fellow resistors, Natalie Hambley, managing editor of SBS Voices.
Hello.
Hayley Ireland, channel manager of SBS On Demand.
Hi.
And Sana Kadar, host of ABC Radio National's All in the Mind.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back.
Good to be back.
We've got a new season.
It's so nice to be back.
It's been a little while. And look, we've got two episodes this time. The new season five has launched with a double episode drop. And we're going to split it up. So today we're going to be recapping episode one of season five of The Handmaid's Tale. And then we're going to go watch episode two. And there is immediately another episode today of the podcast recapping episode two. So we have just watched episode one of season five of The Handmaid's Tale, which is called Mourning. This one is written by Bruce Miller and directed by Elizabeth Moss. Perhaps you've heard of her.
June Osborne.
In the powerful season five premiere, June struggles as she considers her next move after killing Commander Waterford.
What?
I killed Red.
June, you salvaged him.
I got his own fucking hand.
Meanwhile, Serena Joy is left reeling after the death of her husband.
Mrs. Waterford, I'm afraid I have some terrible news. It's your husband. He's dead.
Geez, they don't give anything away in these synopses, do they? There is a lot going on between the lines of that one. But let's get into it and start with our round the room. What stood out for you? Hayley, let's start with you.
I think what stood out most to me was the line, I have to pay a fine online. It was so funny. I laughed out loud so hard that I woke my husband up, who was sleeping like at the other end of the house. It was just like the
an
contrast.
Actual lol.
Yeah.
Just like the contrast between the high drama of the confession scene leading up to that and then the kind of triviality of that outcome. It was like a little fun in-joke between the writers and Elizabeth Moss as director.
Yeah.
You know, playing at, you know, how good they are at building those heart-racing crescendos. But yeah, it was hilarious. That's my favorite moment.
That's a good one. And Hayley, you're not a big laugher out louder. Like that's a lot for you to wake up Alex at the other end of the house. I love it. Sana, can you top that?
My highlight of the episode was the very last scene where June is cuddling Nicole, and it's so beautiful and it's so tender. And it, after, you know, the savagery of what's happened, just all the craziness that, you know, June has been through. It was such a little beautiful moment. I really love that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was great. Natalie, how about you?
They were both great moments. And I think my favourite one was seeing Serena in handcuffs.
Ooh, yeah.
Nice.
Very much enjoyed that.
Enough said. I've probably got two, but I just love that June pretty much wanders around all day with Fred's DNA on her.
It's just right. Yes, it's true.
Yeah, like we I don't know if we ever have reason to go salvage a guy in the woods, I will bring wet wipes.
My goodness. Yeah, and then that she's washing herself off in the public bathroom.
Yeah. The other one was seeing Fred's body. And just more for that person on Twitter who speculated that maybe he's not quite dead because we didn't see.
Oh, his he face. Was so dead.
He's so dead.
Yeah, if only for you that clears that up. Yeah. Oof. Anyway, sorry, I cheated and had a couple there, but yeah, it's too much. All of it, it's back. let's dive right in. So it opens with the Everly Brothers with All I Have to Do Is Dream, and June's very much in a dream state.
I think it was a great song choice because against the montage of those flashbacks from the scene in the forest, it just like really captured the disassociated state that June's in this kind of crazy morning after. Yeah, it was a really great juxtaposition.
And it's the classic June zoom right off the top, right? But this time it's like a happy, deranged June face that we're getting. Yeah, kind of not quite with it, but yeah, classic June zoom.
Yeah, totally.
I like that it was a dream rather than a nightmare because it's a great memory. It's a great moment to relive.
It was her dream. Like, what do you do when you've realised your dream? I guess you want to live in it a bit longer and you want to keep all this blood all over you. Like, put the shower on but rethink it and, no, I'm going to sit with this all freaking day. But, yeah, you know, it's Nicole's face washer that she gets the blood on that these little real-world interruptions into her happy place that, yeah, there's a few of those that Nicole brings her back down to earth throughout the episode. And then I guess that triggers her then to go and bolt to go meet her fellow conspirators.
I loved that so much because I remember us talking in our last episode last season and I remember saying she just needs to go have a shower and like wash that off and then come back and get Nicole. And she just did the thing that I would not expect at all. So, like, the shower is running, but she never actually gets in it. Next thing you know, she doesn't even change, as you said, Fiona, and she's out the door. And I'm like, what? Where is she going? It was so unexpected.
Yeah, again, we can't predict a goddamn thing about this show, but yeah. I like when, you know, Luke and Moira are both questioning her. She tells Moira, like, it's, and Moira knew immediately it was a salvaging because, you know, Moira gets it, but also she doesn't. she doesn't quite get Jen anymore. But, yeah, I like that little nod to a fellow ex-handmaid. And then she's off, but we don't follow her immediately because, and this is probably why we need a standalone episode for this episode, Nick goes home and we meet Mrs. Nick.
Can I just say, I like that we know that we're in Gilead immediately because there are two handmaids walking by.
Yeah.
And how strange that must be once you leave Gilead to not see that anymore. Like, that just must be like a staple thing that they just see every day is just constantly two handmaids going by.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. So Nick comes home. It's the morning after the night before, as we know. And how long did they wait for the reveal of who's occupying his house with him? Were you guys squinting at the side of the screen?
I am so curious what is the deal with his wife, because our first hint that she's not your typical wife is when she says she didn't want to wake the Martha to make the tea. And what wife is so considerate of her Martha? That's a, you know, seems like a rather nice wife. And then, of course, she's asking about whether June got to do what she wanted to do and she'll pray for her. Did Nick manage to find a wife who's in on the resistance or, you know, like on the inside? It sounds like he's got a co-conspirator at home, which makes me very happy for him. But I'm very curious.
Yeah, wasn't she interesting? Not what I was expecting at all. And thank God, nothing like Eden either. Like, I didn't want him paired with like another 14-year-old child bride, which is just horrifying. But she was so likable. And I'm so intrigued by the relationship. Like, does he actually have a partner, you know, not just a wife for looks, but actually someone that he can share his life with? How interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah, yeah. And so Mrs. Nick or Mrs. Blaine, until we find out her real name, she's played by Kerry Cox, who is an actress who lives with a disability and she mostly has theatre credits, so a couple of TV credits. But, yeah, she's very intrigued to see where this this match goes this season.
I had her in my notes as Mrs. Nick as well. The lady needs a name, guys.
She'll always be Mrs. Nick to you guys, let's be real. I was thinking he's like a little Lawrence now, maybe. Like, you know, Lawrence had a good match and, like, it looks like, you know, they were, you know, he and Mrs. Lawrence were partners and looked like it was genuine, you know, they got each other. So here, you know, it's based on honesty by the first glance at least.
I hope so. I'm happy for Nick so far at this moment in our journey.
Yeah, intriguing.
The other thing I'm wondering is, considering Nick's status and now he has a wife, does that mean they have a handmaid?
Oh.
Yeah, good question. that's, I mean, they have a Martha. Surely they've got a handmaid, you know?
Honestly, who knows? But men with babies do go further in Gilead, hey? But that is the one glimpse at this household that we get this episode. So much more to come, no doubt. But from there, we go to the newly single Serena Joy, and she's doing some baby yoga. But that relaxation is going to be very short-lived as she's about to get some bad news about Fred and immediately relocated to a safe house in the aforementioned handcuffs. Thanks, Nat. Now, it's quite a shock to her when she learns that Fred is no longer in the land of the living. I thought it was interesting that immediately her first thought was to go to their tango. Like, that was her memory of Fred.
Oh, that is so interesting, actually. Oh, okay, I've got some thoughts on that, but I want to know what your thoughts are. What were you thinking about that?
Well, I just thought of all their time together, that was when they were both at the peak of their powers in Washington, like on the way up again. She didn't go back to pre-anything when they were aligned and, like, plotting everything. You know, mm-hmm. it was that, the tango. What did you think?
Because wasn't it funny how it wasn't like... It wasn't like a quiet, intimate Correct. Moment they had at home or a shared laugh or time with the baby, like nothing like that. It was when they were both, as you just said, like in the height of their power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were like on show, you know, they were very much like, and it was all very much power and prestige. And it was like, I know that we said before, like clearly they were not like a love match or anything like that. But yeah, how fascinating that for her, that's what she remembers.
Because
yeah.
she's thinking now about her standing, right? Like where this leaves her as a widow of Gilead, not even currently in Gilead. She's definitely thinking about her wagon was well and truly tied to Fred. So now that he's gone, what does it mean for her? And I thought that was interesting too. And I actually read that more as like she was going back to the last time they felt happy together. You know, I didn't actually think about like the political implications of that moment in time for the two of them. I was just like, oh, this must be the last time she felt happiness with him, which is probably both are true, right? Her happiness is couched in what they meant together and the power they had at that time and all of that.
Yeah. I mean, if it was about a happy memory, you know, you would have thought when they had that candid moment fleeing to Canada when they had the, you know, conceived little
That's
Fred, mini Fred or whatever he's going to be. Yeah.
Also that her happiness is tied to the moments when she's seen and respected by men, and that's very much a situation where she's the center of attention in a room full of, you know, high-powered men getting admired by her man.
Classic Serena.
Well, on that, I thought it was interesting how everyone who was leading her away in handcuffs was a woman. You know, a woman was arresting her, and the woman who interrogated her afterwards, or the lawyer who was sort of telling her what happened, was a woman. She was being led off by a pack of women to who knows what.
Oh, yes, good call out. Yeah, because, I mean, Fred got brought to his demise by a real pack of women too. Yeah, good one. And so from there, then June is at the diner with a bit of Dolly Parton playing. Deep cut of Dolly with all her dirty-faced fellow conspirators.
I hated this scene.
What
oh
a funny scene. All of the
I loved it so much.
Chewing.
The sausage.
I know.
The half-eaten sausage at the end, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything tastes better when Fred's dead.
Yes, but then, of course, that this leads to a general assumption, clearly not defined at the outset of their conspiracy to get Fred. Everyone expects that now the same pack is going to go and be the vigilantes for each other. So there's a expectation that now they get their time to eliminate their own monsters. June's not on board with that.
But there's a lot of guns. There's a lot of Chekhov's guns we've now been exposed to. So there's going to be a lot of guns firing at some point or another, right?
Yeah, these ladies are packing heat.
I really love that, though. It seems to make perfect sense to me that they are all, like, that she's managed to find women who also are filled with rage. Because remember, like, last season, she was going to those therapy circles, I think, and it felt like she was the only one that was still really angry, and she was trying to rile up other people, and Emily was sort of quietly backing her up. But she kind of felt alone a little bit in that, and so I kind of like now that she's, like, found other former handmaids, and they're all furious, and of course they all want to tear their own commander apart, because why wouldn't they want that? It makes perfect sense to me.
Aren't these women her former therapy mates, though? Like, aren't these the women she sort of turned and brought onto her style of therapy as opposed to Maura's? That's what I thought.
Yeah, I don't remember them specifically from the therapy circle, but yeah, I think
no, that's I don't specifically remember them either. Yeah. Just, that's kind of the assumption I made in my head. Maybe I've made that up.
She certainly flipped a whole lot of people in to get that pack going. Yeah, but now everyone wants their pound of flesh. And one of them mentions, like, she wants to go for the wife. She wants to get the, Mrs. Radcliffe. And I don't remember.
Yeah, someone said the mistress, and then they said Mrs. Radcliffe. And I thought, am I meant to know who that is?
I didn't think so. I think she was just talking about her rando wife and Gilead.
It's interesting. Oh, you know, clearly she's expecting to meet up with Emily there. And, you know, the ones who are all G'd up, they're talking about going back in, to which June thinks that's a terrible idea at this point. And, like, Vicky starts firing shots in the air and is like,
Vicky, come on, Vicky. What's going on, Vicky?
Keep it together, Vicky.
Too many coffees. You're going to...
Well, although, I don't know, the consequences aren't real. Although they are in Canada at this point. So, yeah, like, Vicky's kind of off the leash a bit. You're not in no man's land now, Vicky.
We don't like guns in Canada, though.
Yeah.
Did you notice that, like, when they were having that sort of standoff, there were crossed wires above them? That was what the shot was, which I thought was quite nice.
Did not notice that.
Neither did I.
But it is weird that they have guns because it's not really something that we've seen. And I think they missed an opportunity. They could have called the episode June Gets a Gun or something like that rather than Morning. Like, come on.
Morning.
But, yeah, the gun thing is interesting.
I mean, we can get to the trailer if you want.
I was just going to say about the trailer, there's a lot of gunshots happening in that trailer. We see a couple of things. Shall I call out what we see?
Yeah.
There's this one shot in the trailer where it looks like June and Serena are having a confrontation somewhere and, like, June's got her hand behind her back and it looks like she's about to pull something. Like, it's like the insinuation of a gun. I watched it twice, so, you know, I'm not totally making that up. And then we hear lots of gunshots, but then we see, like, blood splatter across Nick's face.
And Mrs. Putnam's screaming.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so... A lot of people are going to get shot at some point is what I'm going with.
There's also another shot in woods and there's a lot of women holding guns that, yeah, I noticed. I don't remember the gun specifically, the blood splatter shot that you're talking about, Sana, but, yeah, it's like you're right, Chekhov's guns.
And there's reference to a gun in the finale of last season, isn't there? Doesn't – because she gives Fred the option of a gun or a whistle. So there's, you know, the insinuation that there are guns around at that
point. Yeah, and she's used the whistle, so –
Wrong choice, Fred.
Interesting.
Yeah, someone else is getting gone.
It is interesting that there's all these moments in the series where we're wondering if she's going to take on this kind of hero leadership role within Mayday or within this kind of guerrilla group coming from Canada. And she keeps pulling back to the personal, you know, and she gets this opportunity to go with this group of women back into Gilead and she chooses very, you know, very strong in her decision that she's that she doesn't want to do that. You know, she's gotten what she wants out of that situation and now she's going.
Yeah.
But from the trailer, there's also the insinuation that her and Luke make a decision to go back. You know, obviously this is like bits and pieces from the trailer, the impressions they leave. So who knows what actually happens, but.
Guarantee it's not as easy as we think it is. They're playing us. With five seasons in, guys. Yeah, they're totally playing us. So that's a few hints at what's to come, but we shall see. So from Vicky going rogue into the air, we've got Serena in the compound in her, you know, little hideaway. Willow is there. They're piecing together. She realises with all the clues that June left intentionally that it was no accident. The ring finger is probably the biggest tell, obviously. That was June's intention. Willow seems quite shocked at the prospect that June Osborne might have played him and got to Fred. I like the expression that Serena uses about a scintilla of grace.
Do you people have any decency at all? Any scintilla of grace?
That was a nice, elegant turn of phrase.
I Googled scintilla after that. What's a scintilla of grace? I think I spelt it wrong. I couldn't find what I was looking for. It was a very quick look.
Well, I thought just like a tiny bit of grace. Or like
Teensy bit. Yes, I figured as much.
Why does Serena keep getting the most, like, amazing places to stay?
Because she's Serena.
It is.
That one cost a fortune. What the hell?
It's nice. It's like a little Scandi bunker. Mm. Yeah. I do. Well, we're about to see it in more June scenes, but, you know, just the lack of consequences outside of Gilead. Gilead is a world of consequences whether or not you do something. Yeah. But, yeah, just other than Fred, but even that didn't happen in Canada. He was going to get off.
Yeah, because I feel like I don't really know what her status is at the moment. Like, what was she aiming for before Fred died? Because I think her and Fred were kind of at odds. Mm. And were charges going to come to her or not, and look like not? And it was like, is she just going to get free and live her own life with her baby? Like, or...
Yeah, it was going to be like a trade for Fred going to Geneva and kind of trading as an informant. They were going to get let off. Because at the end of the last season, she was talking about like looking at real estate for where their family were going to move and this and that. So the assumption I thought was that, you know, after Fred had done his bit, that they would kind of be let free. Yeah, which is why June couldn't let that happen. And, you know, she changed the plan.
Yeah.
And Serena got to Canada in the first place because she was making a deal to see Nicole. But now that she's pregnant, does she not care about Nicole anymore? You know, like,
it's... That's true.
Good question. She hasn't mentioned Nicole, has she?
That's true.
No. I doubt she cares.
Yeah. What? So, yeah, I feel like I don't know. Like, what is she actually doing now? You know, where does this actually leave her? And why is she still locked up then? But right now it's for her safety.
Well, they both had the mutual charges against each other, remember? But then they were gunning mostly for Fred. But I do remember the last scene that she had with Fred. He was very keen to Zoom later and she was like, yeah, sure, Fred, whatever. But she was on the phone to the media department of the ICC, I think, using her maiden name. So, you know, she was negotiating an appearance or some such. So, yes, very much living high on the hog, expecting to get out, wanting the good Wi-Fi and go house hunting. Yeah, so she would be sweating on that, no doubt, but who knows? But... speaking of wives, Clea DuVall gets a look in this season because I remember Bruce was saying that she was meant to be in last season, but due to the COVID, she couldn't make it to Canada for the shoot. But it's very good to see her, but it's probably going to be the last time we see her. So she gets to say goodbye as Emily's wife. That is a good scene. Mm. And I like the writing in that one where June is so accustomed to being shamed and with guilt and Lydia's in her head. She's echoing that it's my fault line.
Yeah.
And I love that the response is, I don't care. I don't need it to be someone's fault.
I love that she was as annoyed as I was watching June go on about, I'll fix this, it's my fault. I was like, oh, shut up, June.
Yeah, not
which
about
is
you.
Exactly what she, yeah, exactly. Yeah, she very much, I think, mirrored my feelings anyways, probably a lot of yours.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was like, this is a great twist because we knew that Emily wasn't coming back this season. But I hadn't really thought about how they would explain that away. And then to find out that actually she's gone back to Gilead, I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was actually properly surprised, which I'm like, now I have like mixed feelings. Okay, Emily's gone back to Gilead. Okay.
Mm. Now I want to see her in Gilead.
Exactly.
Aunt Lydia. Like, I want to see her stabbing Lydia again.
But she was great in Gilead. She threw Lydia down those stairs.
I know.
And she does name check Lydia. Like, she's looking for Lydia.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see that showdown.
I wish I didn't know that Alexis Bledel wasn't back in because then I'd be expecting the scene. But
I'm very sad.
Yeah. But in the way that Clea DuVall plays that scene, I was thinking, you know, there is someone with us until her of grace because, like, you know, she's the way she rationalizes it and it's, you know, Emily, we lost her and she came back and now she's gone and we're okay with that.
And that it's more time than we expected to ever have with her. I thought that was really actually quite gut-wrenchingly sad and beautiful to hear.
Felt like quite a healthy outlook.
Right?
Oh, good for her.
It's literally just happened and she's already philosophical about it.
Talked to her therapist and sorted it out in her head.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe June should spend a bit more time with her, but no. But clearly that sets off something in June because that's the first time she knows that Emily's not around anymore and it, you know, obviously makes her rethink her initial stance about going back into Gilead and it's like, oh, Emily's doing it. That's where she goes and washes that man right out of her skin, but also then goes to confess. So, you know, she's not immediately thinking of going back into Gilead. I think she's trying to stop that really and maybe trying to stop those impulses. But again, testimony, she makes, you know, the testimony to the authorities. Again, it has no impact. Mm-hmm. Like, good for the story.
Isn't this so interesting? Like, I love, so intrigued by the fact that she wants to be punished. Mm. And it just makes me think that people crave normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even if their normal is terrible, mm-hmm. they still want normal, and her normal has been to be punished and to be held captive in a way, you know? And but it's almost like if life is happy and peaceful, then she feels like it's wrong. Yeah. So, yeah.
Read it slightly differently. I read it, yes, she wants normal. That's exactly what I thought. And normal is, you know, crime gets punished and there's justice. Like, there is no justice in Gilead. And so she's like, well, I'm in Canada now. Things are, you know, there's justice here. I need justice, you know, even if it means I'm on the receiving end of it. And remember last season when she did her testimony, her 7-minute monologue, her last line was, I seek justice. Mm. I ask for justice. And so she wants to know that bad things get punished because that means things are in order. But that's why she's completely confused and thrown when it doesn't quite go that way.
Yeah. And it took going to no man's land to kind of dispense a Gilead form of justice, but that's literally the only justice that's been served up to Fred.
But it's so funny because what she gets instead is just so ordinary and everyday and completely normal, which is an $88 fine which she can pay online.
Which she does not currently have the cash for, yes. Yeah. It's
relatable.
I also love the irony that posting Fred's finger, the only thing that amounts to is a postal fine, nothing more.
Yeah.
Sorry, Fred. Yeah, no one cares.
Transporting an unsecure biological sample. But on that, side note, on the package, because this is all same day, so did she dropped it off? I can't remember, was there a postage stamp on the envelope? It must have been a hand delivery, so just to get into the weeds on this.
Hand delivery, Fiona.
Good one.
Not a joke. I was trying to think, how did that all work? Because this is the same, you know, this is the morning after.
I actually thought she was delivered the finger. I thought like Serena received the finger last season.
No, the delivery, well, the security guard opened it and dropped it.
Mm. That's right.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then obviously told Tuello and yada, yada, yada. You know, then, of course, Serena demands to see the evidence, to see the body, which we all do. Joseph Fiennes is not in this season, but his lookalike or bits of it.
Wax figure.
Yeah, absolutely. Is all there and some of him's not. That's a good scene, setting up the candlelit vigil outside. You know, Serena gets a rage-filled moment, ripping off the cover sheet to show the evidence, but then goes outside. And what a turn in her mood from just that short walk to see the support that is out there for Team Gilead in Canada.
Just the way the expression on her face changes over the course of those like 20 paces, and amazing expressions from Yvonne. But yeah, you just see the pleasure and the spark back in her by the time she gets to that van, and she is on a new trajectory once again at that point.
Yeah, and she's very much playing Serena Waterford again. Mm-hmm. Even the way she talks to Tuello, it's like when she was barking about get us some good Wi-Fi. It's like, do whatever you need to do to make it happen. I'm taking my husband back for his rightful burial. Yeah, it's good. She's back on the bullshit pretty quickly.
Were you guys shocked to hear her wanting to go back in for the burial? Because initially I was like, you are a widowed woman, of a traitor commander. Like, what really is going to await you in Gilead long term? I feel like this is a dangerous move, but, you know, you sort of know what you're doing sometimes.
Yeah, I think she, you know, saw the power of, or, you know, seeing in them, in the candle, the vigil goers, herself reflected in their eyes. And, yeah, just obviously she knows a good photo op when she sees one. So I think to get more, give them more of what they want.
And maybe the fact that she's pregnant might protect her a bit.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, that moment with the crowd was very reminiscent of them heading off to the court last time, wasn't it, towards the end of season 4, testimony episode. Yes. But then we're back home and it's June repeating the line from earlier about they're not going to be looking for someone who's going back in. You know, she's using it now to talk about Emily. So there's just a bit of a flip from where the episode started to where it's ending in several ways for everyone. And she does reflect that she thought she would be in jail. So, yeah, just reflecting on what's going on here. But then old mate Tuello comes knocking to lift the veil a little bit on where his head is at, because he congratulates her and she acknowledges that, yes, she did absolutely play him as a way to get into no man's land. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he says, well done.
You did something terrible.
That needed to be done.
That needed to be done.
And what he says after that,
ding, ding.
Which is,
I understand what that costs.
And I know what that costs.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you?
Yes.
Tell me more. What is this backstory?
Yeah, what's he referring to there?
Yes, may he rot in hell.
I figured he was referring to giving Fred over to the ICC in exchange for whatever information he could give and how angry that made June, but he felt that was the trade-off that was worth making. But maybe there's more he's referencing.
Oh, I assumed he was talking about himself, like, you know, that like June did something terrible that had to be done. And he has also done something in his past that was terrible and had to be done.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, what is your past?
Yes, but in his line of work, he would be used to negotiating with unsavory types. So, yeah, I wonder.
That's true. Mm.
He understands the Latin line. He recognizes it from the photo of Fred on the wall. I found that really interesting.
Yeah. I loved it. As soon as he said, don't let the bastards grind you down, I thought, drink. Yeah, so that was a nice little insight into his character. And I will say, let's get some more because we have got for you a special episode. We have invited Sam Yeager, Mark Twiller himself into our Zoom room. So we will have a special episode going deep, diving into the character of Mark Twiller with Sam Yeager. So we have a bonus episode with Sam Yeager in your feed now. It's so good. So dive on into that. And then that's basically the end of the episode because then she does go back inside and bathes Nicole in that beautiful ending that that we spoke about. Yeah, interesting that she had to drop Nicole's face towel at the start of it when it brought her back down to earth. But now, yeah, she's clutching her baby close. It's very sweet.
Can I just backtrack slightly from there? Like when we're in the house still before I think Twiller arrives, when Moira is like, what the hell's going on? And Luke's like, she's home. I'm taking a fucking win. That was the line where I laughed out loud. I found like my other highlight apart from that beautiful scene at the end is Luke throughout this episode. Like he is trying to hold it together with humor, with grace, but a lot of humor as well because what else are you going to do at the end of the day? So that line was, yeah, my laugh out loud moment. I love that.
Yeah, good point actually. Yeah, we and back at the police station, I guess it is.
Yeah,
because, you know, at the end of last season when she comes home with the blood streaks on her face, he's shocked and falls to the wall and it, you know, starts this episode in the same way really. But yeah, like, you know, he comes and tells her she's got nothing to feel bad about really and yeah. But she's off the hook. So
yeah,
it's good to see Luke staying true.
Whereas I kind of was feeling Moira when she said, I don't really trust you to bathe Nicole. And I thought, yeah, I don't think I do either.
But then she did such a good job. Although she didn't wrap that girl up in a towel. The whole time I was like, baby's got to be cold.
Yes.
You're fully clothed.
And she's still wearing those black trackies.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, exactly.
That actually reminds me of, it's funny how like you have those moments that it just sort of jolts you out. And for me it was when June had entered the diner and she was catching up with all of those women and they all looked like they'd been in a brawl. And the waitress said, I guess you're with them or something like that. And I thought, they're not really hiding anything, you know. Everyone can just, like, this is not normal just to have blood all over your fingers. And I thought, and so it's so weird that I was kind of stressed the whole time thinking someone was going to call the police or they were going to get dobbed in and it just didn't happen. So, yeah, whereas, Sana, you're worrying about the baby. The heck must be cold.
Well, if we're going to worry about not getting dobbed in, also when the gunshots went off, you know, after the restaurant scene, no one called the cops after that, so everyone's fine, no matter what they do.
You know, June outright made a confession and it's fine.
It's fine.
So, yeah, what a wild trajectory that episode went on. But, yeah, look, I think that we've come to the end of that. So, as we say, we're going to go off and watch episode 2 and have a recap ready and waiting for you. But in the meantime, thanks for listening. It's wonderful to be back and we hope that helped. Before we get into episode 2, we're going to go off and eat some pancakes with our dirty fingers.
And some Canadian maple syrup.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So episode 2 is available right now to stream at SBS On Demand. So through the magic of podcasting, we have an episode for you there right now as well, along with an episode with Mark Tuello, Sam Yeager. So we've got that deep dive on the enigmatic representative of what's left of America. It's a great chat. And when you're done with all that, go watch the trailer over and over again to get some more clues about what might happen across this season. As for new episodes, episode 3 will premiere in Australia on SBS and On Demand on the 22nd of September. They drop a little earlier at SBS On Demand in the afternoon, and we will have that recap ready and waiting for you. I'd like to thank my co-host for jumping back into the fray with me. Thank you, Sana Kadar, Natalie Hambly and Haiti Island. And thank you, Jeremy Wilmot, our audio mixer extraordinaire. And thank you for listening. It is so good to be back. And we'd love to know what you make of this first episode and love to know what you're making of the season as it unfolds as you watch along with us. Reach out to us on Twitter. We know you're not shy when you do. You can find me at anythingbutfifi and use the hashtag EyesOnGilead. Natalie, where can we find you? Are you back on Twitter?
I am back on Twitter at Natalie Hambly.
Sana, where can we find you?
At Sana_Kadar.
And Haiti, have you come back to Twitter for this season?
I have. I'm at Haiti Island.
Excellent. And remember to use that hashtag EyesOnGilead. While we've got you, feel free to leave feedback and give us a rating on your favourite podcast app. It helps other people to find the show. Eyes on Gilead is produced by me, Fiona Williams, and edited and mixed by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next time, say it with me to Willow.
Don't let the bastards grind you down. You don't own. She's with us. I'm taking a fucking win. All right, I'm taking a fucking win.